Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 2 of the Rut Podcast. For those of you who are new to the Rut, we explore the extraordinary stories, psychology, and deep intricacies of men's mental health. I'm your host, James Roycroft Davis, and I started this podcast after finding myself in a rut, feeling like I was never going to come out. But I did eventually, because I started to talk about how I felt. Our mission is very, very simple. We want to finally get men talking about their issues, talking about their problems, talking about their mental health. There's still way too much stigma around men's mental health, so we want to break down toxic masculinity one podcast at a time. If we talk, we save lives. It's that simple. Remember to subscribe and leave us a review too. And you can find us on social media by searching at the Rut Pod for all the latest updates on episodes. This week, I'm joined by professional footballer Joe Bryan, who plays in the Premier League for Fulham. Joe moved from Bristol City to Fulham in the summer of 2018 on transfer deadline day. Fulham had just been promoted to the Premier League again, and he just realised his dream of playing at the highest level of English football. But then, things began to go wrong. This is the first time Joe is speaking publicly about his battles with his mental health, which in the world of football is a brave step to be taking, and most certainly in the right direction. Here's Joe's story, so please leave all judgment at the door. Joe, how are you? Welcome to the Rut.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
I'm fine. Good to see you in full stash.
Finally, full stash, yeah.
I'm in a hotel,
day before an away game. So, yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. I ask this to everybody who comes on, actually. All give very, well, different answers, right? Why did you want to come on the podcast?
Because I got told to, is that right?
That would be I begged you to. That'd be a good answer, yeah.
No, obviously it's a subject that's pretty close to my heart. Anyone that's interested in me will know. And yeah, it's just the whole sort of subject is about raising awareness. Mm. Promoting people to talk about it. It's one of my main things, just promote people to talk about how they're feeling.
Very good, mate. Well, we'll get onto that in a sec. Paint a picture of Joe Bryan growing up, proud Bristolian, and a slightly different path to a lot of other footballers in that privately educated and then moved into football. So paint me a picture of what it was like to be Joe Bryan growing up in Bristol.
So long story short.
Well, we've got a long time, so maybe not too.
No, just the short general background that most people aren't really interested in. Privately educated, primary school, secondary school, yeah. Was a rugby school, all boys rugby school, secondary school. Left that at GCSEs, so did my GCSEs, did well. Got sort of A stars, Bs, that kind of level. And then went into football full-time, did the, I think back in those days, it was called the YTS, Youth Trainee Scholarship or something. For two years, studied I can't even remember now, it was so long ago, something like an NVQ or a BTEC in sport or something alongside football, and then moved into football full time.
And this was when you were 17, 18, right?
Left at 16.
Yeah.
Left school at 16, and then you go into full time football.
When did it become clear to you that football is going to become a thing?
Probably like 13, 14.
Right, okay.
I never really thought about it before then. I just kind of went with the flow, was good at football, played it. It was always in the back of my head. I was always kind of, was like, yeah, I want to be a footballer. But you never really at that age, you just kind of play football because you enjoy it and you never really think, oh, this could be a thing. Until they were like, yeah, I can't remember the exact like numbers and stuff, but they said, yeah, 4-year contract gives you time to develop, to mature, etc. And I kind of just knuckled down and focused, and it's got me so far.
And you went into Bristol City Academy, right?
So I joined Bristol City Academy at nine years old.
It's amazing.
So I was 24. So how's your maths? Is that 15 years?
Yeah.
15 years, yeah. At one club, and then moved to Fulham in the summer of 2018.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. And so did you ever experience like mental health growing up? Mental health problems or issues or kind of being like, okay, well, this is slightly weird. I had a question actually from somebody who was like, who said, did he experience, had he got any experiences of rejection within football, like fear of not making it? did that ever creep in? Yeah.
Am I allowed to swear on the podcast?
Oh, yeah, mate. Don't
worry. Fucking right. Football is, it's rejection. A lot of it is, you're not good enough, blah, 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 all this.
Did that take any effect on you when you were young?
Not really. No, I don't think so.
Really?
Nah, you just kind of, you get used to it. You get kind of like numb to it in football. Mm. You can't deal with it as a football player. Any player that's playing in the Football League or the Premier League or any decent standard of football, you can guarantee that they deal with rejection all right, because there's no way you'd get to any decent level without dealing with it well. Mm. But going back to the original question, when I was younger, I was a moody kid. Like, I was probably...
Anything changed?
Actually, no. You know what? Like, I'm in a good place at the moment. I feel very sort of just like peaceful and there's been kind of an accelerated... I was saying to one of my good close friends, there's been like an accelerated period of like self-growth in the last few months, which has been lovely. And I'm at a place now where I'm just kind of comfortable with who I am. And obviously with what happened in the playoff final, I just think it gave me that little bit of extra confidence that I was maybe lacking. And yeah, it's just, I'm just in a good place. But going back to the original question, I was a bit of a moody kid, probably had mood swings, but used to get angry with my brothers and sister. Like, but I don't think it was anything out of the ordinary. You'd have to ask my parents, but I don't think there was much that I ever went, oh, this isn't right.
Interesting.
I never did anything. I was never one of those kids that like hurts animals or all that weird stuff. If that's what you're asking.
Hurts animals. Excellent. Right. Well, that's good to know. Bristol City, you get signed.
Yep.
League One, right?
Were they League? I can't remember what League. When are we talking? When I was eight.
No. So, okay, we're talking about like your first professional contract, whereby actually it's not just a professional contract in the academy. It's like, okay, well, I'm borderline on the first team / breaking through.
So 16, they gave me the scholarship, like I said. A year later, when I was 17, I just passed my driving test, actually, excitingly. I signed a three or four year, and they said, look, I was still pretty small at that time. I didn't grow until I was sort of 17, 18. And I signed that deal, and they said, look, this is your 3 years, you've got time to develop, we're putting our faith in you, blah 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 blah. Gave me a decent wage at that time. And then I broke my leg a week before, I can't remember, but my leg snapped in half at some point.
Really?
And yeah, I just use that 5 months to get massive in the gym.
Really?
No, I didn't get massive, but like it was one of those where the fitness coach at the time was just like, right, this is a perfect opportunity for you to fill out and just, yeah.
Was there any, like, that leg break, I mean, was there any worry that that was going to hurt your career moving forward, or are you just confident that you've got this 3-year contract and, you know what, I'll be fine, keep working?
Yeah, that was my mindset, was that it didn't really faze me, to be honest. I think probably my parents were shitting themselves. I don't know if Bristol City were. I don't think the financial investment wage point of view would have worried them if I hadn't have kind of got back to my best. But yeah, it took me six months to get fully back to playing, or 5.5 months is when I played my first game. But when you play your first game after an injury like that, it takes a while for you to get back to it.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Bristol City, how many times did you play for them? I should actually have known that in my research on you. And maybe you should know as well.
I don't know. Probably 200 and something.
It's quite a long time. Quite a few appearances.
I made a few appearances.
Yeah. What was the team like there?
It changed a massive amount while I was there. But my resounding memory will be the team that we got promoted out of League One with Steve Cottrell. That was team spirit, everything. That team had everything for the level. It was brilliant. It was so fun to be a part of. A team that was just like, everyone was like mates and just go out after the game. And that's why we all got promoted with 99 points. You just felt like it was your family away from home. That's what it felt like.
I want to come on to your kind of opinions on winning cultures, because actually you've been in a few sides now which have either been relegated or promoted.
Yeah.
But let's move to 2018, you've moved to Fulham, right? You had a season in the Premier League.
So the season before, I had 2 years left on my contract with Bristol City. And I said to myself, look, I need to make something happen here. I want to play in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So I just went for it that year. And it's a bit like, I tried my hardest every game, but that year I just kind of got the bit between my teeth and just had a right go and said, look, I'm going to try and make something happen. Unfortunately, it did. It was disappointing because we were probably, we were third or fourth or second at Christmas that year. And then we tailed off towards the end and dropped out of the playoffs, which was disappointing because to play in the Premier League for my boyhood club would have been one of the best experiences ever. That summer I got a move. I was all ready to go to Villa. That was all.
Yeah, I was going to say it was deadline day, right? And you were about.
It was a day before deadline day. Before deadline day. It was all set. I'd said my goodbyes at training ground in Bristol, and I was up on the motorway to Aston Villa, and then last minute Fulham came in. And when you've got a dream to play in the Premier League and you get told you could do it 2 days later, there's no turning that down. You can get injured, you can do whatever. That season I might have signed for Villa, got injured and never got a chance to play in the Premier League.
That was 2017, right, that you signed for Fulham?
That was 2018. That was the summer of 2018, was it?
No, it was before that, because you had a season
This was summer of 2018, August 2018. I signed for Fulham.
Okay. Yeah.
And then obviously, had lived in Bristol for 24 years. Lived close to family, 10 minutes away from my parents. Bought a house 10 minutes away from them. My brothers lived another 10 minutes on. And then, moved to the big city and started playing for Fulham.
Did you find any like issues there with the move? Because obviously
I wasn't worried at all.
No,
at the time I didn't think I would be homesick. I didn't think I'd encounter any issues. You suddenly, bang, you got the bright lights of London, Premier League, big money, that kind of thing. But it soon becomes apparent that all those things don't matter.
Right, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So talk to me about this, because when we spoke a few months ago, and it's taken us a while to actually record this, your story around depression and anxiety is fascinating, but also one that it hasn't really been spoken about, right? So talk to me about what happened.
So I hesitate to kind of talk too much about it, because I know kind of mental health issues are subjective and they're each individual's battles. So for me, mine aren't too debilitating, and I've never got to the point where like I've considered suicide or those kinds of things. So for me, I always kind of try and keep some kind of equilibrium about it, because I know there are people that suffer a lot worse than me. But I think if you can bring if you can kind of take the taboo away from talking about it, like as a male, it's fine to just go to your best mate and say, look, I've had a shit day. I feel crap at the moment. Like, but we don't do that. We, for some reason, we just don't do it. No. I do it now and I'm so much better for it.
But you're
lost where I was.
You're hesitant to talk about it because you weren't suicidal or having those thoughts. But actually, the point here being is that it doesn't matter whether you're having suicidal thoughts. Mm. The fact is, you suffered, and it was debilitating. It was debilitating for a period of time. Let's be honest. Like for a few months, you were like, "Fuck, where am I going here?" But
It is quite a dangerous mentality to have. Actually, I think I probably phrased that wrong. I'm lucky in that there were people around me at the time. Sorry, I need to put this on. Do not disturb. Am I back? Yeah.
Yeah, you are.
I was lucky. Yeah, I should rephrase that. I was lucky at the time that I had good people around me. Luckily or unluckily, that said to me, look, Joe, I think it was a physio, one of the female physios at Fulham, just like, Joe, you just something not quite right. Like, are you feeling all right, etc. Go and see the club doc and just speak to him. And I kind of knew in my head, I was like, I'm waking up with I kind of had like a weight over my, over my brow. I had like a headache. Just like, you know, when you just don't feel right, you're just not sure about, like, you can't really be bothered to get up. You can't.
But what's the story behind it? You had the hamstring injury, right?
Yeah. So obviously I joined Fulham. Everything was brilliant. Boyhood dream, playing the Premier League. Got injured on my first game, so twisted my ankle. So that was a bit of a kick in the dick. and then, yeah, just slowly, like, I was in a long distance relationship. My girlfriend at the time didn't move up with me because we'd only been together for sort of 6 to 8 months. We started losing, playing poorly, struggled to adapt to the level. I'd say struggled to adapt to the level. Oh, shit. Then I think in October, I tore my hamstring like bad. I think I tore something like 75% of the muscle. I can't remember.
It's painful. That.
And one of the other things was I moved into this apartment that everything kept fucking breaking.
Yes.
Everything kept breaking, like aircon. The aircon wouldn't turn off. So I'd be going to sleep with this like rattling sound above me. And just all these tiny little things got on top of me. And just made me down, to be honest. And just kind of sunk me into this like constant grey mood.
And there was a lack, you were talking when we spoke the other month, you were like, the lack of sleep from this aircon, and it sounds so trivial, but it's not. Like when we're younger, we're like, I don't need sleep.
I tell people, sleep is so important.
So important.
I only need, I've got a little ring. It's called an Oura ring. Oura ring. Now.
Yeah.
That Fulham gave me, they've given a few of the lads them, and it tracks your sleep. It's an app on your phone. It tells you your REM, your deep sleep, your time that it took you to get to sleep. Everything. Best thing that's ever happened to me. Notice so much about sleep. Things like, if you have a couple of gin and tonics, bosh, sleep's disrupted massively. Alcohol, things like that, disrupt it. I'd say to anyone that's slightly struggling, just have a look at your sleep schedule and see if you can sort that out, because sleep's so important.
What were you feeling at the worst times of it? Because, you weren't suicidal, of course, but there was a prolonged period where getting out of bed was tough.
It was a few months where it was like that. Like I said earlier, I was lucky that I had people around me to kind of make me realise what was going on before it got too bad, and make me realise that talking to people is important. And it's completely normal to feel like it. A lot of people feel like it, and a lot of people don't talk about it. But it was just, I just lacked motivation. I was just grumpy. I had, like I said, I had a headache for the best part of sort of a month, 6 weeks, just constant, like felt like I was straining my eyes all the time. I do things like I'd go and sit like in the bathroom at Fulham after breakfast and just sit there for an hour just before training, scoring through my phone because I didn't really want to talk to anyone. I didn't want to didn't really want to interact with people.
Isolating away, right?
Yeah.
And then I think you actually approached the physio. You talked about the physio earlier. You were like, I really don't feel right here.
She approached me. She approached me and just said there's something going on. Have a word with the doc. And then quick as you like, the doc, I spoke to the doc, kind of filled in this questionnaire about how I was feeling.
What did he say?
What did I say? What did he say?
What did he say?
He was just like, oh, we've got a guy called Vin that you can talk to within the club. And started talking to him, had a few sessions with him and just talked things out. And then, it was just slowly started to get better. I ended up splitting up with my girlfriend at the time.
Did that have in the time it had a negative impact?
Yeah, I hesitate to kind of comment too much on it because obviously I care about her and she'll hold a special place in my heart, but like it just wasn't working. And so I needed to just be on my own and deal with the move and get settled into London. And I've moved on from that now and I'm looking and feeling a lot better about everything, you know?
Mate, you're looking great.
It's just about talking and developing and trying to be better, you know?
Mate, good man. Do you mind going through what you worked on with the psychologist?
To be honest, there was nothing really that other than sitting and chatting about how I was feeling and kind of like avenues to explore, like trying to find a bit. I think one of the main things for me that I struggled with was I'd worked towards a goal of playing in the Premier League for so long.
Right.
And then when you suddenly achieve that goal, you're kind of left with like, what's next? Like, how do I re-motivate myself? What do I do?
That's fascinating.
It leaves kind of like an emptiness. And I think I honestly think that's probably the main thing that it was for me. Having that goal to work towards, and your whole life's kind of pushing towards one thing, and then suddenly achieve it. And it's like, great, it's a little bit empty. What's next? Yeah,
what would have been next?
I don't know, and that was the problem. I didn't think what was next.
Right. Interesting.
Whereas now I've set myself goals that will probably remain private, but no, I've got goals and things to work towards, and not just football related, other things, long-term life goals. Business goals, etc., things like that, to keep me motivated and occupied.
Mate, very nice. Let's get on to the summer of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, what, 2019, sorry. And we talked a bit about anxiety.
2019, so probably January, February, was when I started to feel better in general about the kind of just feeling glum and dull and kind of in that kind of like gray mood. So I started to feel better. And then in the summer, I had some time off. And at that time, I actually got quite ill. I had this cold I just couldn't shake. And I had sinusitis. And I'm assuming it's all linked to feeling just generally crap. I explained to you before, I was sat in the barbers and just like everyone was talking in Spanish. And I was just like, what's going on? Like, I feel a little bit, everyone's talking about me, everyone's laughing at me. And most of your listeners will, if they're listening, like, they'll probably have experienced the same at some point.
We had a panic attack, right?
Yeah, well, not, I wouldn't say it was a full-blown panic attack, but I was...
Oh, it depends what you mean by full-blown. I mean, you had a panic attack, and that's the problem.
I sat there and was just like, oh my God, I need to get out of here. I need to get out of here.
You were sweating. Right.
I always sweat. To be fair, I always sweat. I'm a sweaty boy.
Yeah, me too.
No, but like I just started to like panic a little bit. I was like, right, I need to calm down. I need to calm down. Luckily, I managed to calm myself down and get my haircut finished because that would have been a shambles had I walked out of there with half a fade. But no, and then afterwards, I left the barbers and I rang Vin again. I was just like, mate, what on earth has just happened to me? Because obviously I've never experienced anything like that.
No.
And he was like, oh, it sounds like an anxiety attack. Like, talk to me, like, what's happened? And then it just kind of transpired that a few things that I'd been feeling the previous season, like sitting at dinner with the team and just being like, I feel like everyone's talking about me, just wanting to go to bed, things like that. Just
how did that feel though? How did that feel? I'm quite interested by that, because that's something that I, on the podcast, we get a lot of people like talking about that, the fear of being judged, and especially in a professional sport environment, like you're it's a results based environment.
You're right? Judged constantly. So yeah. You're judged constantly. So when you're put into situations where you should be comfortable and sort of without fear of judgment, when things like that start to creep in, it makes you feel very unbalanced and like, oh God, hang on, I should be comfortable in this environment. Why aren't I comfortable? Why do I feel like everyone's judging me, etc. So yeah, that's just, it's a very weird feeling for me. It feels like a kind of heat, like I get hot, I get like, I feel sick. Not to the point that like I feel sick, but I'm never going to throw up.
No, it's but feeling
just,
in
it's
your
just
stomach.
Very uncomfortable. You get kind of like clammy hands and a bit shaky, and it's just it's a strange one. It's one that like I've now learned to kind of control it and
okay,
and just kind of relax and just breathe and just be like, actually, the thing that people don't realize is 90% of the time when you're thinking about yourself, so is everyone else. Everyone else is thinking about themselves. Mm. If you're thinking about yourself naturally, everyone else is probably thinking about themselves. So the likelihood that they're thinking about you and that tiny little bit of water or food that you've accidentally spilled on yourself.
What
is very
was
slim.
Your worries literally, I'm not going to say that trivial, but in the grand scheme of things, to a normal person.
For me, that wasn't it, but for some people, right. I know that is.
Yeah, sure.
I just, like, it was more of a feeling of, like, I was uncomfortable. And obviously, when you're in an environment where there's a lot of foreign languages being spoken, you've got French, Spanish, German, Dutch. If you're sort of semi-anxious about anything, you'll be like, hang on, they're talking about me. Right, I'm going to bed.
Really?
Yeah, and it's that kind of fight or flight mechanic, and yeah.
How long was this going on for?
Not that long. It happened a couple of times. Oh, we've lost it. Yeah, to be honest, it wasn't that long. It happened a few times. And like I said, I've been really lucky with people that have been around me and been able to point that out without me having to struggle a huge amount with it.
Yeah.
And also I take a keen interest in kind of human psychology and kind of working out why we feel what we do and sort of that. So I read a lot of books and it's just interesting to me to kind of work through what you're feeling. And yeah.
The story we discussed with a teammate of yours, Callum.
Yeah,
I mean, that was hilarious, but purely because actually that, from my perspective, that was like your first, well, I think it was your first moment where you kind of made a joke out of it, and this was when you were at the height of
he was the first person that I kind of said to, like, mate, honestly,
do you mind saying what it is, because it is
no,
absolutely hilarious.
I can't remember exactly what I said to you, but I remember saying to him, because we used to drive to training together every morning, every single morning. We'd stop and get coffee and drive in. And like, I don't think I've ever told him really, but like things like that, that routine of going in together, getting a coffee was so important for me. It was just nice. Really? Like it actually turned into things like something I was looking forward to. Little things like that. Even now, when every morning I'll pull up at the coffee shop, get a coffee, enjoy my drive to training with my coffee. It's just like a routine, and it's just, yeah, it's lovely. But so with Cal, he was probably the first person that I said to, like, I came clean to it, and I didn't have anything to admit to, but I was like, mate, honestly, some days
you just opened up to, right?
I just said, some days I go home and I sit and just stare at the wall, and I'm just like, this is shit, like, why do I feel so down? But I've grown up in, obviously my dad's a surgeon, so we've got quite a dark humour. Obviously dad's had to have quite a I say an open relationship with death, but like, because being a surgeon, it's a life and death situation. Like, he's quite kind of easygoing about like humor surrounding things like that. So I was just there laughing about it. I was like, mate, some days I just go home and I've like sit in a room and like don't do anything and it's sad and like what the fuck's going on. And he just started laughing at me. He said, "You're such a flipping weirdo." Like what? Like, but for me, having someone to sit and laugh about it with, and actually, kind of, he's like, "Joe, like, your life's not that bad. Come on, like, for someone to sit there with me and say that, like, helped me massively." And I'm not saying for everyone that laughing at the fact that you're struggling and kind of having a mate like take the piss out of you for it is good. But for me, it worked a treat.
It is. I sometimes when I'm in that place and I'm talking to my mates and they do take the piss out of me for it. Like,
you just get trapped in your own head sometimes.
I know. Some of my friends talk about the rut and it's quite like the podcast gets deep into a lot of issues. And we've had some people who've come on with some quite serious problems like attempted suicide, etc. And they just take the piss out of me as if like to say, oh yeah, another crying session on the rut.
I'm a huge advocate of like seeing the humor in the situations. Just because
I think your psychologist walked into the room as you were on the physio table, right? And or somebody said, Vin's here to see you. And he took the piss out of you, right?
He just used to do things like that. I can't remember the exact what he said. He'd be like, oh, you're staying late, are you? Yeah, you're going to have another flipping session talking about your feelings, you weirdo. Stuff like that. He's like, yeah. You go and moan about all the money you earn a week and the lovely flat that you live in and how rubbish your life is, Joe. Everyone else would get on with their life. That's what he used to say things like that to me. Seeing the humour in it for me is
it puts things into perspective, right? Yeah.
Yeah, especially. I think the thing that I would quite like to get across kind of coming on here is that for a lot of people, you'll be chasing, like, if you're chasing the money, the kind of the career, like, it doesn't bring that, like, deep happiness. Like, it's you need to kind of sort yourself out. If you're constantly chasing numbers, like, you won't ever get any fulfillment, and you'll always feel slightly empty. And I think that's where, like, me chasing that, I want to play in the Premier League. And all of a sudden, I did it. And admittedly, yeah, I didn't do very well. But for me, that emptiness that was left was like, I didn't know how to deal with it. That's the kind of thing I want to get across, is that just don't chase numbers and don't chase like materials and things like that.
Playing for Fulham, Premier League player, I mean, football is very tribal. We know that, and everybody has an opinion about everybody. How difficult was it for you to be vulnerable to people?
Hard to start with. It's just become natural now. It's become completely natural. Very hard to start with, even saying things to my parents. But again, really? Like I said, like, my mum's brilliant about it. I think dad and my brothers struggled a little bit at the beginning to kind of fathom like how can you be feeling down when you're playing in the Premier League, you're earning all this money, you're like doing something millions and millions of people want to do. How does that work? But through time, it's just become easier. And just through being like, right, I need to be vulnerable sometimes. I need to talk to people about things sometimes. It's become natural.
I want to talk about mental health and football because I find it interesting. On the outside, generally speaking, as a fan or as supporters, you really see how football, the perception is that a footballer's life is just all rosy. I mean, you basically turn up to a training ground, you get told where to piss, where to shit, what to eat, and then you go home, you do it all again, and you kick a ball around with your left foot or right foot, right? And granted, there's massive amounts of money in football now, but it's not all that rosy, as you've said. So, like, how rife is mental health issues in football? Obviously, not naming names, but you're in the inside looking out. Like, how big of an issue is it?
I don't really know, if I'm honest, because for me, until, like, I always hid it. I'd hide it at the training ground. Mm. I'd hide, I'd put a smile on. Like, I said, I'd go and, I don't know, like, because at the time I didn't, A, I didn't know what it was, so it was uncomfortable. Mm. And B, you're still in a situation where, like, I was sat there going, if I'm vulnerable and I look weak and all this, and I don't know what's going on with me, and like, will I play? Like, will I carry on playing, or will people like judge me? That kind of thing. So, I think there's a lot of it in football, especially now with all the media attention. You've got social media, you've got Sky Sports News rolling every single day of the week, picking up stories about an 18-year-old making kind of a mistake that 95 million other 18-year-olds in the country have done. And yeah, it's just, I think it is rife, but most people are hiding it, and it's our job, well, my job and your job, to hopefully open people's eyes and make it all right to say, I feel like shit. Like, some days I feel like crap. Some days I don't want to come to training. I want to lie in my bed and watch Friends. I'll still get up and go to training, but it's the same with any job. Like, some days you'll probably wake up and go, I can't be asked to do this podcast today.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just life. It's just life. We all hate our job. No, I'm joking, but it always comes back to the same thing. It's all right to be grumpy some days. Some days it's all right to be energetic and love life. Some days it's all right to be like, not today. I had a training session. Actually, I had a training session 2 days ago, and everything was annoying me. And like, when I was 22 or 21, like, I'd have probably let it get to me and boot someone, like do a nasty tackle on someone to vent my frustration. Whereas now I'm 26, I'm like, today's one of those days where I don't feel great. It's too hot, so I'm angry because it's hot. And I've doing a shooting drill, and every single shot's gone over the bar. So I'm just going to go home and try again tomorrow. And not think too deeply about it.
There's an amazing book, actually, called Fringes, which is written by a guy called Ben Mercer, who used to be a professional rugby player.
Rugby player, yeah.
Yeah. And it's...
He played for Bath, didn't he?
He did. No, his brother Guy played for Bath.
Guy, so yeah. My brother used to play his brother when he was school age.
Right, okay.
It was a big rivalry, apparently.
Yeah,
I never took any interest in it.
Ben's book on because he went to France, but he was playing in like the lower divisions in France, and his book on, it's called Life on the Edge of Professional Rugby, talks about what life was like, obviously being on the fringes of practically like the top league. Now, you've had experience coming from Bristol, and you went on loan to Plymouth Argyle, I think, and you'll remind me of the other team.
Bath City,
right?
28 day loan. What a time that was.
What a time. Matt, the government the other day, well, not
Hang
the
on.
Other day.
Where have we gone with this?
So this is all coming into the same question, which is...
You're about to start yelling about Matt Hancock at me.
Yeah, well, Matt Hancock said, why don't footballers give up a proportion of their salary? a while ago. And from a player's perspective, and from maybe players in the lower leagues, and hopefully you can represent them in this answer or do a relatively good job of it. But what's it actually like trying to make it? Because it's not all bells and whistles and hundreds of thousands of pounds a week down in the lower leagues. And I can imagine mental health in the lower leagues is really difficult.
I'd say as I've gone further up, it's got more tough.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Purely from the point of view of that, I think a lot of the things that I struggle to deal with are the the kind of just a constant attention. Like, I'm fine with it now. Like, it doesn't bother me. You can say what you like about me on Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. But as kind of like an early 20s, like maybe 24 coming into the Premier League, it was such a kick in the, it was such a kind of kick in the ass. Like, wow. Like, the attention surrounding it, any move that you make gets picked up. It's like, talking purely on the pitch now, I'm saying, is any move that you make gets picked up and pulled to pieces on TV. And I just want to play some football and enjoy it. Like, that's, I'm quite good at it. I get paid for it. And yeah, that's my mentality on it. I think in lower down you go, there's much less attention. You can, obviously there's more real life worries then, with sort of like, am I making enough to live on? I think down in kind of like conference level and stuff, and that brings with it its own worries. But my experience is probably skewed in the fact that I've spent most of my career now in the top half of the Championship or the Premier League. So kind of mine's more, my attention is towards the kind of social media aspect and the constant kind of feeling like you're being surveyed all the time, and some fat idiot at home on his sofa.
Let's talk about social media.
Telling me I can't play football, like, that used to bother me. Now it's just kind of funny.
Most people I talk about, most people is nobody. I've asked a few people about like questions to ask you, who are, like I said, bigger football fans than I. Social media in football is a fucking brutal world.
I like it because I'm happy. Like, you can abuse me, and if it's delivered in a humorous way, I'll laugh and find it funny.
Really?
If it's just like, Joe, I hope you break your legs and die in a fire, it's not funny. Like, it's not funny. It's not intelligent. Like, it's just like, what are you doing? But if someone says something like fairly humorous, tongue in cheek, kind of about a game that I might have played rubbish in, if I played rubbish, I'd probably agree with it. If it's funny, I'll probably laugh at it. But it's the kind of mindless abuse of someone because they're someone. I just don't get it.
How do you safeguard yourself away from the media and social media?
I don't really. I don't have any notifications on Twitter. So if like someone adds me on Twitter, the only ones I see are people I follow.
Right, okay.
My Instagram's a free-for-all. So for anyone that wants to abuse me, just slap a comment on one of my photos, because if it's on Twitter, I won't see it. But like,
Instagram's the thing that
gets me is that, because obviously I'm in a kind of what's the word? I'm in a privileged position. I'm doing a job that everyone wants to do. I'm kind of, hopefully people look up to me. I don't know if they do, but I try my best. hopefully they look up to me, and like, if someone says something on Instagram, I want to like, I think it's funny to just comment something back. You can't. You're not allowed. Because then it's like, oh God. Like, I made a comment the other day in an interview, a clearly tongue-in-cheek comment about how when my dad operated on the manager's dad at the time, I had a few tweets going, oh, that's why you're playing in the team. Like, there was a couple of like clearly joking tweets at me about it. And I was bringing it up in humour. You should have seen the furor that ensued after that interview came out. Look all we've done for you. Like, you, there was your hometown club. I can't believe you talk about all the fans in the club like that. It was just like, oh God, this is everything that's wrong with social media, is that like one comment can get so viciously blown out of proportion.
Like, does it affect footballers, or are most footballers now, they've had it drilled into them, like you pretty much have, is to just bat it away? Does it affect other players that you know?
Not really. I know most of them now don't like look at their tweets. Really? And that's the danger for me. Social media can be such a brilliant place where you can interact with fans and like put across, like, I try and put across my personality. I only really use Instagram. Like, I put across my personality. You see a little bit of my life. You see what I'm interested in. It's not just football, 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 football. And this is the danger that you get if you've got that kind of, and the problem, is 10, it's 10, that's four, 10 fans probably out of 10,000 might be the ones that are constantly trolling you. And it's the same in any industry, films and movies, they're the same. Films, like anything like that, TV, like you're always going to get people that troll you. And the danger is that you kind of, in a world now where the players and the people like this, the stars of said world don't want to kind of interact. And the idea of these things is to have kind of positive interactions and spread creativity, joy, love, that kind of thing. Whereas if you're constantly being abused, it's just like, you know what? I'm going to keep myself to myself, walls up, live my life in quiet.
Mm. You've had a few injuries now.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Very fair. No, I like that. Yeah, no, definitely fair enough. And sorry, I should have commented on that.
I sense you were bored with that subject.
No, not at all. No, I find social media, I personally have a real love-hate with social media.
Yeah.
Like with the podcast, I'm like not forced, but I feel obliged to obviously promote it on social media and do my very best to promote the stories that come on. And so I'm hoping when this is released, you'll do your best to promote it as well. Mm-hmm. To take some of the pressure off me. But I find social media, for me, it's less about being trolled because I have 400 followers, not like I don't know how many you have, 10,000 or whatever. And or maybe I'm doing you a disservice there. But for me, it's about this comparison. It's this constant comparison of a life that might be better than my perceived life. Do you know what I mean?
And that's, it's a highlight reel, isn't it?
Yeah, it's savage. A highlight reel
of people's lives.
Yeah, yeah. And then you get
that's where it's important to just like. Even a little thing like the other day, what did I do? I didn't finish a book. I gave up because it's crap. So I just posted on my story, like, gave up with this book, couldn't finish it. Language is too hard. But I think it's important. Little things like that make, if I'm posting like books on Instagram, people will be like, oh my God, this guy reads 58 books a day. How on earth does he do that? I don't. Like, the last book, I started a book a month ago. I've still got 200 pages left to do it. But you'll look on my Instagram and you'll see like 12 books, and 12 books across a year is only 12 books a year. It's not a lot. And people look at it like, oh God, he reads so much. Why don't I read that much? I need to read this much. And there's this kind of, like you said, comparison. And it's like, it's my, like toxic productivity kind of thing that is just like a real, like everyone has to have a side hustle, a multi-million pound company, amazing Instagram, like go on brilliant holidays, go and pop bottles in some wanky nightclub. No, just live your life and do what you want. And if you want to post like a selfie in the bath like Ricky Gervais, crack on. If you want to post a photo of your Lamborghini, crack on. Like you should just be positive about it. And did you know what? This is why I love TikTok. If you go on TikTok, it's one of the most positive places ever.
Really?
Just everyone builds each other up. No, it's good. I'm not on it either. I mean, I don't make them because I can't quite get to grips with this.
I'm the same.
I love it.
During lockdown, we had a group, my group of friends, and we were doing Zooms, and it was like a competition who ran the best quiz. And one of my mates, Will, and his missus put in this rule that you had to send your best TikTok video.
And that then, you've
so,
made.
Yeah. So Abby and I were like, what? What is
a TikTok?
We had to download TikTok for the first time. What the hell do we do? And I was just, fuck it, I'm just going to create a video in a onesie. What? No problem. But
easy.
Oh my word, it's so long. You talk about this like obsession with productivity. My therapist calls it masturbation. So
masturbation.
Must do this. I should do this. Yeah. I've got to do this. It's like putting this internal pressure on yourself. And the language you use is constantly like unconsciously feeding this notion of fuck, focus, pressure. And I'm the worst for it.
That's the thing. Like I post a photo on Instagram during lockdown. And it basically just said like, because I found lockdown really weird in I don't know when this is going out, but lockdown number one, I'm talking now. I don't know what we might
next few weeks. Yeah, kick off season two with a bang.
Yeah. So during lockdown number one, I just noticed that it was this. There was this culture came through of like, you're not doing anything at home, so you should be doing yoga every morning. You should be drinking 48 gallons of water, eating only kale, then doing some Pilates. Then you should be meditating for 14 hours on like your fingertips and just this. Yeah, like I said, like toxic productivity. So I just thought it was important to I put up a photo because basically that weekend, I reckon I played Call of Duty for about 24 hours out of the possible 48. And it's like, sometimes it's all right to do that.
Yeah.
But like, I still try and put across this thing of learn all the time.
Yeah.
Like fall in love with, we as people, we leave school and we stop learning. We stop educating ourselves. Mm. Like fall in love again with learning from like books, from other people, from like YouTube, all that. Talk about your feelings. But also, if you want to play COD for 3 hours straight every other day, do it. If you want to go and like watch a whole series on Netflix one day, do it. But like, it's all a balance, isn't it? And just don't worry about what everyone else is doing.
What do you think you would have done if you hadn't have been a footballer?
I reckon I'd have been like a very high class bank robber. No, I don't know. It never really crossed my mind.
Why do you think you'd be a high class bank robber?
I just think I'm very unassuming. I don't think anyone would ever think of me to commit a crime.
Yeah, fair. I can't work out whether those glasses are actually just a fashion accessory or they have lenses.
They are real. They're minus 1 point something.
Right, okay.
They are required. I'm currently in the process of getting contact lenses fitted to play. But at the moment...
Playing blind.
Yeah, I'm playing with a bit of a blur, so...
Yeah.
Any mistakes are not my fault.
Yeah, hence the 3-0 on Saturday.
Wow. All right, we'll end this right here.
Yeah.
No, just look, any mistakes aren't my fault. Blame my stigmatism, you know?
Very good. So you've got no idea what you'd have been if you hadn't have been a footballer?
Never really thought about it, but I know that now I'm... I've got a very close friend called Russell that's he's like a life coach, mentor, that kind of thing, and I sit and speak to him quite a lot. And what's rubbed off on me, and my eldest brother's a primary school teacher, so what's rubbed off on me is that like passing on knowledge is something that really fulfills me. And teaching speaking to like some of the young players at Fulham about like finances and kind of buying a house as opposed to your Louboutins, that kind of stuff, and being sensible with your money and open with your feelings. That's the kind of thing that like I enjoy and like, yeah, fulfills me. So something kind of teaching related, I think, is what I would have done or what I will probably go into post football.
There's the question I was going to ask before I was accused of being not very interested in your answer was about injuries, and you've had a few fairly major ones now. Obviously, the latest, the hamstring almost ripped off the bone was a nice one, and obviously the leg break. The statistics in football basically suggest that the vast majority of players don't get to retire from football in the way they want to, and actually in sport. So it's not like James Milner, who's played since he was 16 in the Premier League, and he's still.
So I've heard rumours about him. He's a robot and he's the fittest, the fittest man in the world, and he's actually made out of metal. So
really,
no.
So. What's it like? What's it like to go out on the pitch knowing that potentially? I'm not sure if you've thought about this, but what would it be like? What's it like to go out on the pitch knowing potentially your entire career could be ended today?
It's all right because I've got insurance.
There you go.
You have career-ending insurance. So
I'm not talking financially. Kind of financially.
No, I know. I was joking. I do have insurance. It doesn't bother me. It's not something that crosses my mind.
Okay.
Same question to you. What's it like to know you could walk out the street and get hit by a bus?
Yeah. No. I.
It used to worry me when I was while I was suffering from anxiety.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, take your point. Yeah, it doesn't really.
Yeah, so it's just life. I've been actually quite lucky, touch wood, with injuries. I've had two fairly serious ones. Other than that, very few. And like you said, the very few players get to retire in the bodily situation that they'd want.
Yeah, of course.
But for me, like, I think you have one body, barring some pretty rapid development in science. We have one body for the foreseeable future. And I'm going to look after it. And if I get to an age of sort of 30 or 31, and I'm like, you know what? I'd much rather be able to go skiing with my family and to be able to run around and play football with my kids when I'm a little bit older. And at that point, I'm feeling like football isn't going to allow me to do that. And I would happily go, thank you very much. I've had a lot of fun. I love the game. But at some point, things like that become more important.
Clark Carlisle, who's obviously fairly famously had his mental health troubles, said that one of the worst parts about football is if you lose, you have to wait until next Saturday to redeem yourself. Like, does that have an effect still on players?
Yeah, of course. We've got players in the dressing room that very different. It's different for every different player. Like for me, if we lose on a Saturday, I'm quite good at kind of reviewing it there and then after the game, and then going, right, I've left the stadium, I've left the training ground, I'm going to go and enjoy my weekend. I'm going to not going to sulk. I'm not going to get pissed off. I think it's important. It's important to be able to like compartmentalize these things.
I presume you also give that advice to the younger generation of footballers coming through how mentally you deal with losses, right?
Yeah, exactly. Don't get me wrong. Like, you want a winning mentality and you want to win. And I, like, until the final whistle goes, I won't ever give up and I won't ever be like, we've lost. And afterwards, I'll be pissed off. I'll be as pissed off as the next guy. But once I've left the stadium, I will more often than not be go and enjoy dinner with my family, or go and go out and with my friends. And yeah, I think it's important. It's important to not let that one thing like kind of rule your life, because like you said, you've got to wait until next Saturday to put it right. And if you're carrying that, like anger, I think I'm reading a book called 11 Rings. Where is it? Somewhere here. Let me find it. One sec. Here we go. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So I'm reading this at the moment. I actually just read, is proverb the right word? It's like a Buddhist saying that if you're the one, like if you're holding, anger's like a hot coal. If you're holding it, you're only going to burn yourself. So like if I'm angry at a football game and I have to wait until next Saturday to put it right, more often than not, that whole week's going to be crap. So just let it go, deal with it, learn from the mistakes that you might have made in the game, and then try again next week.
Very interesting. I'll give that one a read. Actually, that looks quite interesting.
This is a really good book, especially for kind of mindfulness.
Is that about the NBA?
So Phil Jackson was I'll read the thing. The legendary NBA coach shares secrets behind his leadership.
Yeah,
he was the coach that won 6 rings with the Chicago Bulls during the like Jordan and Pippen Rodman era, and he also won 5 rings with the Lakers during like Shaq and Kobe. And he was kind of like the mastermind coach behind it all. So it's really good, Very interesting. Gives you an insight into something I'm quite interested in at the moment, is trying to get the best out of others. Gives an interesting insights into that, because obviously Michael Jordan and those kind of players. And it also talks about kind of dealing with issues through like meditation and mindfulness and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
What do you do day to day to keep on top of your mental health?
Completely openly talk to people.
Really?
I'll just talk, honestly. Sometimes it might be annoying for my friends and stuff, but I just
if I'm feeling down about something, I won't hesitate to mention it to my housemate, actually, Harry. He's really, really good at kind of listening and talking. And more often than not, I don't agree with what he says. But like, sometimes it is nice just to have something, someone to talk to.
Mm. Do you meditate?
I do. I'm crap at it, but I do. And it's obviously another subjective thing that it helps me, but I can't concentrate for more than about 30 seconds on it without my mind wandering.
So,
but it's a development process, isn't it?
Of course.
Today I can concentrate for 30 seconds. Next month I can concentrate for 45 seconds. And before you know it, I'll be meditating for 24 hours.
I'd love to see that. You won a PFA award, Player in the Community, recently, right?
A few years ago now, I think. Three years ago.
I want to get your opinion on how COVID is going to impact like the mental health of young people, because I think it's going to be absolutely catastrophic. But from your opinion, and I suppose maybe football perspective too, like where are we at and what could
where are we at with mental health and COVID? Tough question. I think if you look at it from the point of view of things we've discussed today, you've got young people cooped up inside in a lockdown, probably staring at screens for, I'd be interested to see how the screen time of individuals has gone up during lockdown. Staring at things, staring at like everyone living their best life, uploading photos of holidays that, I think 98.9% of the British population went to Mykonos as soon as the lockdown ended. I think that was the stat. So everyone's going to be uploading their summer holiday photos for the next 6 months. You've got young people sat there staring at them, comparing themselves to it. And yeah, it's just, unless there's kind of a shift in people being open and chatting about it. Because I don't really know. Like in general, are people open about it? Do you think?
Open about COVID or mental health?
Open about mental health things.
No, I think...
do you think people still have their blinkers on? I haven't got mental health issues.
Precisely, yeah. There's a huge stigma attached to it. And there's been a couple of people that I know who've referred to my mental health issues and they've been like...
It's all nuts, mate.
Yeah, or you suffer... Right, so I suffered obviously last year and earlier this year, and they're like, "Oh yeah, you must be done now. You're done suffering." And I'm like, "Do you know what?
No, you just live with it. You just live with
it. Yeah, you live with it. It's like it's life sentence in that respect. But you understand better ways to manage it. But this is the understanding that there's a significant lack of understanding around mental health, and the most important thing, as you've referred to many times, which I'm very grateful for, is talking, because people don't do it.
Yeah, you just get stuck in your own head, honestly.
Yeah.
I find often that the worst parts are like, the worst times are when kind of like 10 p.m. you're lying in bed, might be scrolling through your phone, and you're like just lying in bed on your own in the dark. Those are the worst times. You just get kind of like stuck in your head. You're overthinking. You're like running through scenarios in your head that would never, ever possibly happen in a million years. But somehow you convince yourself that they have.
What do you do when those scenarios in your head are running their course? How do you deal with that?
I've started doing things like I'll get up, I'll go and sit in another room and read my book for 10 minutes. That kind of thing. I think the best thing to do, honestly, is the best thing to do is just put the TV on. Just be like, all right, well, you know what? I might not be able to sleep tonight, but just go and do something else. A player that once suffered with insomnia said to me the best thing to do if you can't sleep is to... remove yourself from the room and then go somewhere else. Just go somewhere else and sit there and you'll start getting a little bit more drowsy.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I want to move on to this quickfire round. What number one, what's your favorite book and why?
My current favorite book is a book called The Book of Joy. Did we talk about it before? I don't think we did.
No.
It's just a conversation between the Dalai Lama and the Archbishop Desmond Tutu. They're good friends, and I can't remember, for one of their birthdays, the other traveled across to see
they see each other and they spent like a week just talking about what constituted joy. And it's just a guy that kind of writing the conversations that they had. And it's very interesting because they're obviously two very spiritual, very influential leaders from very, very different cultures that have found friendship and love in kind of like adversity. So it's interesting to see what those two people. So that's the one at the moment that I'd say to people to read. And also, if you're into basketball, this is a great read.
I'm gonna read that on holiday actually.
I'd say the Book of Joy is the best one. Book it's of just Joy. A lovely, peaceful read.
Okay.
And it's one that like it's the kind of book that I keep next to my bedside table, and you can just open it up and read a chapter on. I don't know. There's like a chapter on happiness, or there's a chapter on meditation, or there's a chapter on certain things. You just open it anywhere and read a chapter, and it's lovely. Just yeah, lovely.
Just lovely. So much loveliness.
It's just a lovely book.
Number two, what lesson have you learned in your life that you know is true, but you kind of hate?
I'd say that success comes from doing very small things day in, day out for a very long time. Overnight success does not happen, or very rarely happens.
Very good.
Tiny little things, like, honestly, like reading 10 pages of a good book each day. You learn something every single day. And someone that's learning, it's the reading thing for me, honestly. That's what I always go back to, is just read 10 pages a day. If you want to change your life, go on Google and just type in what are the best 10 books for personal development, buy some of them and read 10 pages a day every time you get up and use the bathroom in the morning. I have a book next to my bathroom toilet next to me bog and every morning just read 10 pages. And if you're reading 10 pages of a book that's going to teach you stuff, you're going to learn something every single day that someone that doesn't read doesn't. There's no difference between someone that doesn't read and can't read.
Very good. I like that. I'm gonna stick a book by my shitter.
You have to actually read it though, and that's why habits like that, you have to attach them to something you do every single day.
Yeah,
and it's quite hard. But it's quite hard to attach reading to a drive to training because you don't concentrate on the road.
Do you do all the books?
I don't. They send me to sleep.
Really?
I learned that lesson on the M4. No, I did. I didn't actually fall asleep, but no, I was listening to one. What was I listening to? I know I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast with Elon Musk.
Right.
And that guy, Elon Musk, he talks just in a completely different language to the one that I do. He's so hyper intelligent that I just can't understand the things he's saying. And B, when someone's talking like that, in that kind of, they're talking at that level for it's that long, I just go like that. I just start falling asleep. So I can't do that. I have to listen to music when I'm driving. So audiobooks are a no for me.
Very good. Number three, your friend who's having a tough time at the moment, picks up the phone, he rings you and he's saying he's having a really bad day today. What do you say?
Very little. Don't say much, just like, how are you? And often they'll if it's a silence, and if someone's rung you, they want to talk. So as the listener, you don't need to say a lot. You just have to kind of leave it silent and let them talk and interject every now and then with something like positive or because they're probably not looking for you. Often when the problem that people will find when in that situation is that me as the listener might try and fix the situation. You can't fix it. You just have to listen. Just be a good listener.
Empathy versus sympathy. I've said that a few times on the podcast. So
yeah, I posted a quote on my story the other day. Most people listen to reply. They don't listen to understand. If that makes sense.
Very good. I like that as well. Yeah, you're so, a fountain of these little quotes.
I am.
Unbelievable.
I'm getting tattooed all over. That's all the reason,
yeah. No, Jesus, that is it. That's a good one. That
for our generation especially, that's important.
Yeah, 100%.
Because, like, those kind of conversations that you should just listen and try and understand and be empathetic and, yeah.
Mm. Number four, when you're struggling with something or struggling yourself, what's your go-to? What or who do you turn to improve
alcohol
things?
No, I'm joking.
Heroin.
When I'm struggling with something, the first thing I'll do is I just like realize where I'm at and just don't, like, I won't try and fight my emotions. I'll just let them and just kind of deal with them and just let yourself feel what you're feeling. Don't try and fight. Like, don't try and fight. If you're feeling sad, just embrace the fact that I'm feeling sad today. Or if you're feeling down, just embrace the fact that I'm feeling down today. And then I'd say to like Harry, my housemate, or my mum, or something like that. I just feel like, I feel a bit down today, and I don't really know why. Or yeah, but I think the main thing for people is to don't try and fight your feelings. Like, if you're feeling something, just embrace it. And like, if you want to talk, talk. If you don't want to talk, don't talk. Just kind of get comfortable with how you're feeling.
See, it's an interesting one because actually it's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it? You're constantly, if you feel something, you're like, why the hell do I feel like this? As opposed to sitting there and just be like, or pretty much surrender.
Yeah, just surrender and just be like, there's no point in sitting there feeling sad and being like, right, I should feel happy, so I'm going to get up and do something. No, just embrace the fact that I'm feeling sad today.
Comes back to that masturbating thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking on Instagram and everyone's happy. Everyone's on holiday. Why am I on holiday?
Yeah.
Now I'm sad.
Everyone's buying nice houses and cars. Why aren't I doing that? God, I'm just nowhere near where I should be. And I now need to... God.
All comes back to the same stuff, doesn't it?
Number five, you're lying on your deathbed looking back at your life.
Oh, that's morbid.
What are you most proud of?
What am I most proud of so far? I am most proud of the fact that I've made loads of money. No, I'm not. I'm proud of the fact that I've made my family proud so far, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not even just talking about football. I think that I'm becoming someone that, like, hopefully people look up to, and not just at football. I'm hopefully becoming someone that kind of people look to for sort of education, people look to for kind of help, that kind of stuff. I think that's what I'm most proud of, is that, yeah, I don't really know, actually. It's quite a tough question, but like, I want to become that's what I want to become.
Someone that kind of, I was going to ask you, actually,
like a leader, that kind of person that people look to for, like I said, like education, help, like kind of little things like reading recommendations. If someone comes to me and says, oh, I read a book you recommended, it's one of the best feelings ever.
Really?
Yeah, it's so nice. It's like, because you, and they're like, yeah, oh, I love the Book of Joy, like, I've taken some of the things from it and I've implemented them and my life's just that little bit better. It's like, all I did was post on my story, and that little thing that I've done. It's all about making yourself feel great. Fuck everyone else.
You have to, like, today's world, you have to be so selfish. No, but you're kind of right. Not the fuck everyone else, but actually the concept of being selfish is actually one of the most fundamental parts of being a quite happy human being, weirdly. That's what
you have to be comfortable with yourself to be able to have kind of good relationships and friendships.
Yeah, exactly. You talked at the start of the podcast. Yeah. You talked at the start of the podcast about, like, this period of kind of 4 months now where you're now at peace almost all the time, and accelerated self.
Oh, no, not all the time. Not all the time. By no means all the time. Let's not get that twisted. I still feel like crap a lot of the time.
Sure.
But it's more, like I said just before, was it's more about being comfortable with.
Yeah, what's happened
today? It's more about just becoming comfortable with your emotions. I feel sad today. Okay. It's fine. I'll probably feel better tomorrow. Oh, I feel sad for a week. It's not the end of the world. I'll feel better. next week. It's that's when I say I feel just more peaceful. It's like you're not constantly trying to fight your emotions.
Mm.
You're just like open to how you're feeling.
I should take that advice.
It's from my friend Russell. If anyone wants to look him up, he's called Pearls and Poison London on Instagram.
Pearls and Poison London.
He's a very, very interesting character.
Really? Very nice.
Yeah.
It's been a fabulous hour and a half. Well,
is that how long it's been?
It's been a absolutely fascinating hour and a half. I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing your battles and how you've grown and opinions on football.
I hope someone finds some help from it.
I would say how can people find you, but obviously actually you've got your notifications on social media turned off
don't find you
on the pitch at Craven Cottage.
Nah, people find me Instagram. That's where I reside. That's where I post most stuff.
Great. Well, if we can get you one extra follower to follow, that's all we want.
Double my followers.
Yeah, I know. Mate, thank you so much for talking.
Cool. That's all right. Thanks, mate.
Can't thank Joe enough for coming on the podcast just then and being so open about his battles and challenges with his mental health. Anybody who speaks up within the footballing world or environment is a huge, huge inspiration, as it can be a really, really tough place to speak openly about your battles, your troubles and your issues. So it's genuinely fantastic to see Joe speak so articulately about his issues. So cheers, mate. Thank you for coming on. Next week on The Rut, I sit down with Alistair Campbell to talk about his long battle with depression. We spend an hour chewing the fat over what it feels like to be suicidal in such a pressurised environment like 10 Downing Street. We talk about his coping strategies, Sean Dyche, and his new book, Living Better. So that will be a fantastic episode to listen into, as it's fascinating. We dive deep into one of the most amazing minds I've had the pleasure of diving deep into so far. As usual, if you haven't already and you've liked what you've listened to, please give us a subscribe. I'm missing my words there. As we have some absolutely spectacular guests coming onto the podcast for season two, if I may say so myself. There really are some episodes you don't want to miss. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, on @TheRutPod, where we will bring you highlights of previous episodes and keep you up to date with who's coming on next. Thanks for joining me. See you next week.